The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the speaker. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice from your own physician.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the NASJ podcast. My name is Tobias Matei. I'm the deputy editor of the North American Spine Society Journal, and I have the pleasure of having with me today Dr. Asa Peterson and Dr. Howard Place. They are the authors of an article recently published on NASJ entitled Isolated Thoracic and Lumbar Transverse Process Fractures. Do they need spine surgeon evaluation? A high volume level one trauma center experience with cost analysis. Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Place and Dr. Peterson.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for having us.
Would you like to give a brief introduction of your practice, Dr. Place, and maybe also Dr. Peterson? I know you're a resident heading toward a spine fellowship. So just to give you an idea of how this paper came about.
Sure, so I'll go ahead and start. So I'm an orthopedic spine surgeon. I've been at St. Louis University for over 26 years, and it's a high volume level one trauma center. During that period of time, there's a lot of folks who get evaluated with pan CTs, and sometimes there's just very incidental findings of a transverse process fracture in isolation. And because they had any type of spine injury, the spine service would then be consulted to do that. And we recognized that most of those patients really did not need any care. And so it became something that was basically a time sump there, where it would take time to go and evaluate folks, and also a cost sump there when other studies may or may not be done. And then patients weren't getting mobilized, and they also would, their discharges would be delayed waiting for the spine consultant to come by to say that, yes, this is something that did make a difference. So I think that's some of the background about how this all started.
Yeah, so. Perfect. And one of the things I'm curious, Dr. Place, and you know more about the history of SLU and how this all started, because I'm curious, there's one publication you cite, for example, I think it's from 2008, and it was already good evidence showing that isolated thoracic and lumbar TP fractures did not need spinal consultation. And I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, that at SLU, maybe this started because there were some unrecognized sacral fractures, which is something that we know are associated with TP fracture, and that was the reason for the current protocol. But walk me through that historically. Why are St. Louis University is a little bit different than most level one trauma centers in which these pathologies do not require spine surgery consultation?
Yeah, so I guess I would tell you that I don't know that the paper you referenced, that we referenced there, actually was as well recognized and appreciated. Plus the fact that, as you know, sometimes new information doesn't seem to be accepted readily, especially when there's a history of things being done a certain way. And we've had a lot of turnover, both in different trauma leaders over time. And that has, and someone comes from another institution and they say, no, we have to go ahead and get every one of these seen and evaluated. And I would suggest to you that it wasn't until we actually had enough of a challenge problem and enough people to kind of say we're wasting time that we could relook at this, and people then wanted evidence. And so that's why we repeated the study.
Okay, I understand. And this is a unique study because correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's the first one in the literature to present comprehensive cost analysis of the consultation and additional imaging. So that's definitely something new. So walk me a little bit through the methodology and then what results you got, if you want to give us, our listeners, an idea.
Sure. Asa?
Yeah, so this is as a level one trauma center, St. Louis University has an incredible trauma registry. So the registry was just curated for the CPT codes associated with transverse process fractures. We excluded cervical TP fractures because those are known to be a little bit more dangerous and can kind of be associated with instability of the C-spine. So that's why we focused on the thoracolumbar spine. And so it's a very time-intensive study that took a couple years to complete, but we're looking at patients from 2012 to 2018 going through their imaging, their trauma CT PAN scans and dedicated spine imaging, trying to assess if there was any additional spine injury in addition to a transverse process fracture that was called upon by our radiology colleagues. And so that's kind of the background as far as assessing the actual injuries. And then over that course, you know, we found or only found five other quote unquote missed injuries by our radiology colleagues in the thoracolumbar spine, which were all treated non-operatively, which kind of lends more to the stability of these injuries that that 2008 paper also had data to support. And then just adding a spin on it, you know, from a resident perspective, getting these consults was, especially in the middle of the night when you're busy on a polytrauma call or whatever, is can be a difficult situation with the trauma team looking for answers, et cetera. And kind of wanted to see what the cost to the patient actually was for us to see them without, as Dr. Place had mentioned previously, really doing much for them. That led us down the cost analysis route, and it was really just talking to our billing department as well as the ED billing department and the trauma billing department as far as how they code our consultation and a surgical service seeing this traumatic injury, which from a cost analysis standpoint is very pricey per patient.
One of the things that kind of helped us identify this in isolated costs is we would be able to, the CPT codes initially had a code for transverse process fractures. 22305 would be a code that you could use for treating it. And so that would be your CPT code for treating like a body fracture would be 22310. You have a transverse process fracture code, which would be 22305. So there'd be a code, a note in your consultation charge for this. And we realized that this was just cost prohibitive or should be cost prohibitive for wasting time. And moving forward, that kind of helped us identify a number of these patients.
So I understand in terms of the results, you had 228 patients that ultimately fit the inclusion criteria, and only five of them had lesions undiagnosed or misread by the radiologist. So those are either fractures in different spinal segments or maybe a vertebral body fracture that was missed in the CT scan, but those are not actually cases where the TP fracture itself was implicated in whatever pathophysiology of the disease that ended up requiring a brace or any other treatment, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
So one of the things that caught my attention and was initially thinking about how generalizable these findings were is that one of the exclusion criteria were patients with immobilization of the lower limbs or any other changes in neurostatus, which prevent a full neurological exam. So I thought initially that maybe there was a selection bias and maybe your whole sample ended up selecting just those patients without severe polytrauma. But looking at the series, I think your median hospital stay was around between 7 and 9 days. So I do think that you capture the bulk of those patients with polytrauma and who are at a high risk of other injuries. Am I correct?
I think you're very correct. I think one of the reasons that we excluded those that we couldn't get an exam on is we didn't want to assure that we weren't missing other things on those patients. Now, we looked at their CTs, but we wanted to make sure that we weren't missing folks who for some other reason had a neurologic deficit that maybe we should have been looking someplace else. Maybe that TP fracture is associated with an epidural hematoma or some, you know, massive other injury there. So that's part of the reason some of those got excluded, but all those studies were looked at and again, did not identify any others.
And I understand in this analysis, which encompassed 6 years, the average additional cost for the spine surgery consultation and whatever further imaging or treatment require was about $2,500, and the total costs of this throughout these years was $1,725. So if we break down that, I found interesting that the vast majority of this cost, maybe 70 to 80%, was related to this, to the fact that these are cases that are coded as a level 3 trauma because they require a surgical consultation, and they would otherwise not qualify for that coding. Is that correct?
That's correct. When I talked to the ED billers, this like level 3 trauma classification, which is just, you know, not a life or limb threatening injury or whatever. But once you consult a spine or a surgical service for evaluation, it classifies as a level 3. And it's when I was digging for that information a couple years ago, it was $12,000 flat fee per patient.
So that's a bad incentive for a hospital to be able to use. And I'm not saying it's used intentionally. I think there's some justifications for that. But the fact that you can transform a ground level fall in a level 3 trauma and add that billing because of a surgical consultation, I think that is something in terms of the operation of the whole system that it's a little bit problematic. Do you agree, Dr. Place?
I do. The other part of the cost estimate, Dr. Marte, is that it really didn't take into account delays and time still in an emergency department for those evaluations. It didn't take into account delays in mobilizing patients there and the other impact on folks there. And so I think our cost estimates are really pretty low there when you look at the challenge. But if you add that level 3 trauma, that certainly does make up for that. But that's part of the process, right? You had a level 3 trauma and it costs there, but also there's the additional cost of leaving them immobile, leaving them in bed, and what that also leads to. So I think our cost estimates are a little bit on the low side.
And it may be hard to quantify those variables, right? How can you quantify the diverted attention from a resident who's seeing a polytrauma and at the same time he has 2 or 3 TP fractures to evaluate overnight? I mean, how does that affect patient care overall, and even in terms of immobilization? I mean, maybe 1 or 2 DVTs that could happen because of patient being immobilized for 12 or 24 hours until they get spinal clearance may be a problem that overwhelms any possible benefit in the whole cohort of patients, right?
I totally agree, especially when you look at the fact that none of them had significant missed injuries.
And I understand the whole justification about the TP fractures being a surrogate marker for other fractures. In some sense, I understand the justifications, but we don't get, for example, CTs of the head for patients without head trauma just because they had a CT of the abdomen demonstrating a fracture, and that tells it's a high energy trauma, and therefore there could be something in the brain. So extrapolating the possibility of injury somewhere else because there's a fracture, it's something that I think you're trying to fix a problem of related to the reading of the fractures themselves and try to find other surrogate markers. But at the end of the day, I think the problem is still there. And if you have to get 228 CT scan to find 5 fractures, which all of them are non-operative, it does seem to me that there's an opportunity for cost optimization in this situation.
Our study would suggest that we strongly agree.
What do you think are the next steps, Dr. Place? Because I understand that, I mean, it's very good to have all this data analysis with the institutional experience, and especially with the cost analysis. what are the next steps? And that serve as an advice for those who are listening, and they may realize, oh, I work in a level one trauma center, and that's we have the same situation. What are the next steps, for example, here at SLU, in order to persuade our trauma colleagues and to implement the institutional changes we need in order to be more coherent with the findings of the study?
I think the next steps for us are going to include disseminating this information better. We talked about the challenge with that earlier reference. Really, it wasn't, nobody seemed to pay attention to the fact that this was unnecessary, but it continued. I think we need to get that out to our colleagues again to realize this doesn't require surgical intervention, doesn't require a surgical consultation there. And I think if we're able to be successful at that, we may actually be able to show that we can reduce some length of stays.
And I understand that this is somewhat a defensive medicine approach, right? I mean, if you show this, and someone may argue that in the past there was a diagnosis of an unstable sacral fracture associated with a TP fracture, the bottom line is that based on this data, it's not a cost-effective study to diagnose injuries somewhere else.
Yeah, I think the injury you're looking at specifically is an isolated L5 transverse process fracture. But a CT scan that shows an isolated L5 TP fracture usually picks up the sacral fracture at the same time.
And just to highlight to our listeners, I mean, we're not talking about TP fractures which involve the facet joint or other findings. TP fractures which are also associated with an increase in the interspinous process distance. So in this case, I think you were able to isolate only those TP fractures not associated with any other signs of instability, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
Anything else you would like to highlight to our listeners?
No, just I want to thank NASS for the opportunity to present our work and for you to be able to let us have a chance to discuss how important we think it is.
Thank you very much, Dr. Place and Dr. Peterson. We appreciate you submitting your research to MassJ, and we look forward to further research from the orthopedic department as submitted to the journal.
Great. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, Dr. Day.